Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You've heard of the placebo effect, but are you aware of the nocebo effect, in which the human body has a negative physical reaction to a suggested harm? Your mind has the power to create its own physical reality.
This will make you vomit.
Why do we yawn when we see others yawn? Throughout history, there have been incidents. The Dancing Plague of 1518, the Tanganyika Laughter Epidemic, the Hindu Milk Miracle. Some believe they're a response to stress. Psychologists call it a conversion disorder, in that the body converts a mental stress to a set of physical symptoms, in this case, a tic or spasm. And, like any disorder, it can be contagious. This kind of collective behavior is not limited to human beings. What we know is that in certain communities, under specific circumstances, an involuntary physical symptom developed by one person can become viral and spread from person
what was that?
To person. Person. Until the entire community is infected. And so, my question to you is, if the idea of illness can become illness, what else about our reality is actually a disorder?
Happy heresies and welcome to the desert of the real. And thanks for that speech, John Hamm, you semi-omniscient narrator of the Gnostic Gospel, Legion. We will be discussing a whole lot of hermeticism in this eternal now. Yeah, but what does the Legion quote have to do with Hermes, you may be asking? Easy. Hermeticism, as Gary Lachman wisely stated, is, quote, the religion of the mind. As we are housed in the universe, so is the universe housed in our minds. The microcosm and macrocosm of Hermes thrice great.
You want to understand the universe, embrace the universe. The door to the universe is you.
Me?
You? Me?
You are really intense.
Both the Gnostics and Hermeticists contended that the ultimate consciousness was nothing more than a perfect mind in an eternal state of imagination, contemplation, and compassionate wonderment. The mind of Christ that Paul talks about. The Pleroma of the Valentinians, or the eternal realm of the Sethians. Philip K. Dick said that since the universe is made of information, then it can be said that information will save us. Thus, Gnosis allows us to calibrate our minds to the mind of God and become one and the same, as it was always meant to be.
Is this all real, or is it just happening inside my head?
Of course it's happening inside your head, Harry. Why should that mean that it's not real?
Our minds are so powerful, you see. As the Legion quote declares, all based on science and psychology, our minds can change our health and reality itself. And that's even without getting into Donald Hoffman or Bernardo Castro. Furthermore, depression, anxiety, and stress can be contagious. And lastly, our present reality could be a shared mental disorder or psychic pandemic we're all suffering from right now.
Human beings are the only animal that forms ideas about their world. We perceive it, not through our bodies, but through our minds. We must agree on what is real. Because of this, we are the only animal on Earth that goes mad.
We can change all of that. We can imagine better and make better realities. We can become clear in vision, tune our thoughts to those of the ultimate consciousness, become immune to the cosmic nocebo effects of the demiurge that made humanity mentally sick to the point we manifested this current universe. We can do that and so much more. You can do it, and you've come to the right place to gain that gnosis, to wake up, to reach your potential and unleash that universe that is within you. As Stacy Martin said, I find myself homesick for a place I do not know, but somehow have not forgotten.
I remember I am energy, not memory, not self. My name, my personality, my choices all came after me. I was before them and I will be after, and everything else is pictures picked up along the way.
So welcome to Aeon Bitnostic Radio with I, your host and pompous of Gnosis, Miguel Connor. Welcome to finally understanding you can attain the mind of God. Stop denying your potential and allow Hermes and Sophia to guide you through the doorways of perception to see everything as it is, infinite.
By the power of truth, I, while living, have conquered the universe.
What we do in life echoes in eternity.
You'll get closer on this episode, for we have the pleasure of being joined at the Virtual Alexandria by David Pantano. He will discuss his new book, The Hermetic Physician, The Magical Teachings of Giuliano Kremetz, and The Fraternity of Miriam. Ready yourself for anti-nocebo doses of classical, Renaissance, and occult hermeticism. David shoves that caduceus up the rectums of so many false realities. We could only do an hour because of some Archon monkey shines. So for all subs, I will include a past interview with Tobias Churton, where he discussed Hermetic philosophy, the connection of Hermes and Enoch, and a lot on Hermeticism in modernity. Pure alchemical gold. You'll love this bonus.
There's an old Zen koan. It goes like this. Everyone has two lives, and the second life begins the moment you realize that all along, you only had one.
You have the mind of God within you, an entire universe. And as both the Gnostics and Hermeticists claimed, we are all connected by our divine sparks emanating across and beyond time and space. Like the Koric Cosmos says, animals and plants come from our human souls, and therefore our becoming conscious means more compassion, caring, and understanding for the world, for the universe, for the least of our brothers. You have the mind of God. You have limitless love. Don't let them fool you into thinking your mind is just gray matter, when in reality it is the font of almost unlimited possibility, healing, and laser eye purpose. That's a fact. That's what the Archons and their Karens and Catamites in the establishment are trying to hide from you. Let's imagine better and break out from this agreed mental disorder with contagious depression, anxiety, and stress. It is our birthright. As Clark Emery wrote, the awakening of any individual is a cosmic event.
We can make anything we fancy in this arena of infinite promise. And this is what we come up with? Weapons? War? Surely we have more imagination than that.
For more context, let me quote from Gary's seminal book, The Quest for Hermes Trismegistus. We can still learn much from Hermes himself. If nothing else, his call for us to be caretakers of the earth is clearly much needed today. And if this is all we learn from him, we shall profit from it considerably. But while we should certainly fulfill the obligations of one side of our nature, we should not allow those of our other half to fall into neglect. One way to avoid this is to muster that godlike concentration of consciousness the thrice great one required of his students in order to grasp his teaching, lest it comes like a rushing river tumbling in flux and outruns any effort we make to understand it. The similarity between this and Favre's intense and focused curiosity seems clear. It is through efforts like this that the two branches of knowledge, gnosis and episteme, with which we began this essay, come together and inform that third path, as his sobriquet suggests, Hermes is our most trusted guide. That path, however, is not straight. It curves and curls and twists like the serpents of his caduceus. And if we happen to lose our way, which is altogether possible and in fact to be expected, we may find some unknown treasure, some Hermion, that makes the detour more than worthwhile. Hermes, we remember, is the god of travelers, not of destinations or arrivals. And as the world is infinite, so too is the knowledge of it. In fact, with each new incremental advance of our knowledge, the world itself increases by so much.
You want to keep things on an even keel, I guess is what I'm saying. You want to go with the flow. The sea refuses no river. The idea is to remain in a state of constant departure while always arriving. It saves on introductions and goodbyes. The ride does not require an explanation, just occupants.
And as Rilke tells us, each act of consciousness may indeed create new worlds. So there is much at stake. The prospect is certainly challenging, daunting even. But it is also powerfully exciting and a tremendous lure for that intense and focused curiosity that fuels this never-ending quest. As P.D. Ouspensky wrote, at the close of a book that emerged from his experience with his ashtray, the real, true progress of thought exists only in the widest possible striving towards knowledge, a striving which does not admit the possibility of resting on any forms of knowledge already found. The meaning of life, Ouspensky recognized, lies in eternal seeking, and only by seeking shall we ever find new reality. This is one way to describe the Hermetic path. It is a very good way, I think, and it is in this sense, I believe, that we should follow the teachings of Hermes Trismegistus.
To live is to risk it all. Otherwise, you're just an inert chunk of randomly assembled molecules drifting wherever the universe blows you.
My friends believed in me, but they need some kind of hero.
Then be a hero. Don't you see? It's not about you. It's about them. Don't know that you got a choice, son. No man can walk out on his own story.
Let us end with a mercurial interaction with Pickle Rick and his therapist, which underscores the nuance of our two competing states of mind, and what I've been talking about, that domain of the trickster Hermes. What choice will you make? What side are you on? At least today.
Wow. Why didn't you want to come here?
Because I don't respect therapy. Because I'm a scientist. Because I invent, transform, create, and destroy for a living. And when I don't like something about the world, I change it. And I don't think going to a rented office in a strip mall to listen to some agent of averageness explain which words mean which feelings has ever helped anyone do anything. I think it's helped a lot of people get comfortable and stop panicking, which is a state of mind we value in the animals we eat, but not something I want for myself. I'm not a cow. I'm a pickle when I feel like it. So, you asked.
Rick, the only connection between your unquestionable intelligence and the sickness destroying your family is that everyone in your family, you included, use intelligence to justify sickness. You seem to alternate between viewing your own mind as an unstoppable force and as an inescapable curse. And I think it's because the only truly unapproachable concept for you is that it's your mind within your control. You chose to come here, you chose to talk, to belittle my vocation, just as you chose to become a pickle. You are the master of your universe, and yet you are dripping with rat blood and feces, your enormous mind literally vegetating by your own hand. I have no doubt that you would be bored senseless by therapy, the same way I'm bored when I brush my teeth and wipe my ass. Because the thing about repairing, maintaining, and cleaning is, it's not an adventure. There's no way to do it so wrong you might die. It's just work. And the bottom line is, some people are okay going to work, and some people, well, some people would rather die. Each of us gets to choose.
This is the Aeon Bide interview. And with us, we are very happy to be joined by David Pantano to discuss his new book, The Hermetic Physician, The Magical Teachings of Giuliano Kremertz, and The Fraternity of Miriam. David, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you for inviting me, Miguel, and I look forward to our conversation.
Pleasure is all ours, and as I mentioned before in our pre-interview chat, great book, and it is definitely a pleasure to bring light to a sort of overlooked but important exemplar in the esoterica and hermeticism, the modern type. But with us, before we get into that, we still have who I considered my number one favorite Italian occultist, and that is Van Saatchi.
Hello, hello. I'm really looking forward to this. I've heard quite a bit about hermeticism generally, and I was surprised when I was learning about it just how foundational it is to a lot of things and its relation to Platonism and so forth. It's a very important movement in the early years of mankind.
Yeah, and it didn't get the persecution or fury that Christian Gnosticism got, even though hermeticism and Gnosticism are basically cousins, some say one in the same font of Egyptian lore that just took, one took a pagan direction, the other one took a Christian one. But before we get into all of this, David, how did you become interested in hermeticism or the Western mystery tradition in general?
Yeah, I guess my interest goes back to reading the Neoplatonics authors, Greek literature. Plato himself, and fast forward that a couple thousand years to the Italian Renaissance, where in the Western world, anyways, the Hermetic texts were rediscovered in 1460 by an Italian friar named Guitone of Pistoia, and it was on behalf of the Florentine governor of Tuscany named Cosimo de' Medici, who mentioned who had his leading scholar of the day, Marsilio Ficino, to stop translating the Platonic texts and to go directly to the Hermetic texts. That's how much they were valued. And from that work itself and the scholarly material that followed the translation from Ficino, Giordano Bruno, Pico della Mandala, John Dee, Robert Flood, et cetera, that really piqued my interest. And I guess the time around the 1600s when Descartes came out with his propositions And there was a turn and turn away from a gnosis or an internal revelation to truth that's based solely on empirically defined and observed traits, that Hermeticism went underground again. And I thought the authors I liked, the ones I just mentioned, I thought it ended with Descartes. And little did I know, I guess around in my personal experience in the 1980s, reading the works of another Italian Hermetic writer, you may have heard of him, called Julius Evola.
Oh, yeah.
He made mention to this Italian, this magisterium of writings associated with this Italian magus called Giuliano Kremeritz. And I'd never heard of Kremeritz, and that really spawned my interest. And then there wasn't any books available in North America, in Toronto. So I had to do some search, go to the library, and back in those days, it was pre-internet, had to send a fax or write by paper mail to a publisher in Tuscany to order some of his books. And I was blown away that the quality of writing, the depth, the significance was of the level that the authors I mentioned, but also it included more modern concepts of psychoanalysis and science. And it just been hooked ever since.
Wonderful. And thanks for sharing. And yes, Hermeticism was huge in Greco-Roman times, late antiquity, even in Greek Egyptian times with Thoth Hermes, Hermes Trismegistos. It was just where all of the magic and esoteric and really innovation really happened. But some have said, David, that the Hermetic texts really transform the psyche of Western Europe, not even Western Europe, but also Islam too. Hermes was huge in Islam, and they changed the psyche of the Islamic culture, but it did the same in Western Europe. It taught us humanism, the elevation of the spirit, the idea, the potential, the endless potential of the human mind to create, explore. Would you agree with this, that the Hermetic texts were sort of a Viagra for the human psyche?
I don't know about the Viagra, but the human
analogy,
psyche, but your paraphrase, your summation of the impact of the Hermetic texts is, I think, is right on, both in the Christian world and the Islamic world. There was even a Hermetic society in Turkey all the way up to about the 12th century with a town called Haran, where they were still practicing Hermetic rituals and practices. So without a doubt, I mean, the reading the Emerald Tablet, which is sort of like the guidelines for Hermeticism, and you see how relevant that those texts, those principles still are, that everything is interconnected, everything rolls back up to the one and then precipitates back down into the multiple. And that's sort of the premise of Hermeticism, that we're not these, like we think of the ego, where these separate individually separated from the world, from each other, that we're all connected at a deeper level. And that fundamental premise, I think, resonates with me, because it does bring everything closer together. And it does show that how a change in one element of the great cosmos can affect, can have a domino effect in other parts of the universe.
Well said indeed. And what, as scholars have noted, what happened was that at some point, even before Descartes, that scholarship figure out that Hermes wasn't this really antediluvian guy who was like rubbing shoulders with Moses and all that, so that he sort of fell out of favor in the churches, Catholic and Protestant churches, and then because it wasn't ancient, it was, you know, in AD that it was written, so it wasn't really that old or ancient or had that much pedigree. So Hermes fell out of favor, but Could you tell the audience, did he, or specifically in Italy, how did Hermes continue to exist?
Yeah, and then, Miguel, that hypothesis, I believe, has been overturned.
Oh, really?
In the sense that even though the Hermetic texts, the parchments that have been discovered are traced back to the first and second century of the Common Era, mm-hmm. that the tradition of Hermeticism itself was, as most ancient traditions, was oral. And right. the references in terms of the that are mentioned in the text refer to happenings in pharaonic Egypt, in ancient Egypt, that go back millennia. So it doesn't really hold water in the sense that just the text that was, or the parchment, the manuscript that was discovered, may have been a translation or ascribed at a particular period in recorded history. It doesn't negate that the material itself, the philosophy, the oral tradition precedes that that particular manuscript by millennia. So it's a hypothesis. You were right. There was a fallout, especially among scholars, because when the Hermetic texts were first discovered in a province of in the mountains of in what's presently known as Macedonia, but at that time it was part of the Byzantinian Empire, it was thought that Hermes was a contemporary of Moses, and that he was a king that of ancient Egypt that was at a point in time that almost predated history. And then, you know, went through scholarly validation. I believe the scholar was Isaac Kozaban. He was able to determine by the language that it was used, in terms of the Greek that was used, that was from that second century CE. But again, it doesn't negate that the material itself that's referenced predates the time of when that particular those manuscripts were scribed by hundreds, if not thousands, of years.
Yeah, I agree with. No, I've always said that Hermeticism is definitely older than Christianity. It's a lore. It's an ancient lore. But when it sort of fell out of favor, was it still popular in Egypt, or how did it? Who followed Hermeticism in Egypt during the Enlightenment and in modernity? Not Egypt, Italy. Did I say Egypt? I meant Italy.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was hearing Egypt. So in Italy, alluded to earlier, there was this humanistic tradition where scholars and the learned class were hungry for ancient wisdoms. There was this return to the roots, to return to origins. And so the scholars of the day were busy translating Plotinus and Plato and Aristotle and so forth. And so there was this culture that was generated, and it was around the time that a lot of other esoteric material came to light, such as the Tarot, which the earliest traces of the Tarot date back to Renaissance Italy. So there was this as the name Renaissance, rebirth. There's this theme of renewal, of return to the origins, is to get back to the roots of who we are as a culture, as individuals, as a tradition. So the findings of these Hermetic texts really fit in with the period and the time. And the humanistic culture in Italy was really propagated by academies, which aren't what we think of academies here as some types of scholastic institutions, even though there was a pedagogic component. They were really centers of esoteric knowledge and transference of information. And the Hermeticism, in terms of the practices, was really spread through these various channels of these academies, where scholars would go from one academy in Italy to one city of Italy to another to share the information to share some of the manuscripts, to write out some of the, you know, some of these ancient texts that were beginning to be translated in Latin and in the vernacular. So there was this whole thrust for renewal, for discovering ancient wisdom and to bring that to light and into the contemporary societies. So that to me was the terra firma, the humus from which Hermeticism grew, specifically with the learned class of some of the scholars that I mentioned, Ficino, who not only translated Hermeticism, but practiced magic as well. He was said to be born under the sign of Saturn, so he was prone to depression. So to counteract that, he would take out his lyre and he would sing Orphic hymns to be able to elevate his spirits as a mean to counterbalance those Saturnian influences. So there was a whole series of practices that accompanied these texts as well. And some of it, and not some of it, most of it was underground or esoteric because of the politics and the theocratical society that Italy and the various nation states were under in that time. So the one had to practice it in a very reserved manner. But the academies were very big. There was a revival of the Platonic Academy in Florence under the head of Marsilio Ficino. And from there, throughout the major cities of Italy, from Milan to Venice to Naples, etc., that Hermeticism was really diffused as a revival of this ancient wisdom, of this ancient theosophical and Gnostic path to reach into higher states of being.
And let's move forward to a few centuries ahead. In the 19th century, obviously, there was a occult revival in both England and Germany. What was the atmosphere for the occult or the esoteric in the 19th century?
In which?
Italy.
In Italy,
yeah.
So where the Miriam and Kramers differ from, say, esoteric movements such as the Golden Dawn and so forth, is that the esoteric movement in Italy is sui generis. That means it's from its own traditions and not from Germany, that had a lot of influence from Hasidic or Jewish type of mysticism of the Kabbalah. So the Italian esoteric tradition is roots in the Greco-Roman Egyptian philosophies and practices. And that's what really differentiates. So the Kabbalah has the 10 Sephirot as a pathway for the individual to transcend their earthly existence. And in the Hermetic tradition of Italy, there's the four bodies that Plato and Aristotle write about, the Saturnian, which is the hylic or the physical body, the lunar body, which is the emotional center, where love is the center, and then the mercurial body, which is the body associated with energies of the intelligence, and then there's the solar body, which is the subtlest component of the self, which is a divine nature. And so the practice or the alchemical practice of this Hermetic tradition is to integrate oneself to the principle to be able to transfer one's center of being from the physical, which most individuals are. They are the product of the experiences received through their physical senses, the five senses, to one of transferring the center of their being to their root of their self, the solar self, which is called the noumen. And that in itself is to be able to transcend one's own physicality in a time-space dimension to enter into a more subtle dimension where the laws of physical nature do not apply in the same manner.
No, makes sense. And we shouldn't definitely talk about Marco Daffy. Could you tell the audience about him?
Sure. Marco Daffy was very interesting esoteric figure in 20th century Italy. Timelines where he was born in 1900, died in 1969. And he initially was associated with Giuliano Kremers, who was the leading esotericist of Italy of the last century and of many centuries. He's sort of like the Hermes of his time, so to speak, and he was renowned for having very high level powers, initiatic powers. And Daffy met Kremers in the late 20s, and right away Kremers recognized that Daffy was a man with an emancipated soul, that he had certain powers that are uncommon, such as mediumistic powers, that to be able to telepathically connect and to see things that other people couldn't see. And Daffy was heavily influenced by Kremers, but he went beyond Kremers. When Kremers died in 1930, Daffy was perhaps, and not perhaps, but was the leading hermeticist of Italy, perhaps of Europe of that time. And he wrote a number of, he wasn't really a writer, but he was in contact with a number of other esotericists, where through epistolary exchanges, the documents, the correspondence that Daffy had with the various followers were the material that I've translated, and which I will be continuing to translate in further books. So Marco Daffy was a pseudonym. The physical person behind Daffy's name, Baron Ricciardo Ricciardelli. Marco Daffy was his inner self. So one of the attributes that Daffy had was to do Pythagoras-like investigations of his ancient self. It's called anamnesis. It's a practice that you find in Plato about finding your innate traits and going inside yourself to get outside of yourself. So Baron Ricciardelli was able to do that, and he divined that he was this ancient scribe named or sacerdot named Marco Hefedar, which was a Phoenician sacerdot a few thousand years ago. So there's a whole lore and there's a whole practice associated with that, which I'll write about in my next book. But that in essence gives you a sense of Marco Daffy. He was very much a highly elevated initiate with certain unusual powers and a very strong gift for going inside himself and understanding the various components of gnosis, to be able to transcend his physical self, to enter into a state that allowed him to have a view of time that superseded the linear sense of time, if you get where I'm going with that.
Got it, and very cool. Well, let's talk about the man himself, Giuliano Kremers. Tell us about his life and how he embraced the occult.
Sure. So Kremers predates Daffy. He was born, his timelines are 1861 to 1930. He was born in a town outside of Naples called Portici. And in his house, as when he was growing up, there was a very highly developed initiate named Izar bin Eskor, who was one of the elders of this secret order called the Egyptian Order. And this Egyptian Order goes back to the source of the Egyptian Rite Freemasonry that was founded by Raimondo de Sangria in the early 1700s, and Cagliostro was initiate into it, and Henri Schudi of Switzerland was as well, and Rudolf Steiner, so on and so forth. So Kremers, as I mentioned, in his house when he was growing up, there was this initiate a loner named Izar, who initiated Kremitz at a younger age. And Kremitz developed these faculties and these powers. And he won when he was later on in his youth, in his early 20s, he was with his master, Izar, and there was a pandemic in Naples, cholera pandemic. So not too dissimilar to what we've experienced here in the West with this COVID, where people were dying left and right. And Kremitz said to Izar that he wanted to develop a practice where individuals and collective could harness psychic powers to be able to use it for healing and for lessening of pain. So that led to Kremitz going abroad to France and to South America to learn from various schools that practice mesmerism and magnetism and all kinds of healings. He also received a degree in conventional medicine. He came back in Italy in the 1890s, and he founded this journal called this magazine called the Il Mondo Secreto, the Secret World, where he espoused the principles of both divine and natural magic, and specifically harnessed or focused on healing. And simultaneously is founding this magazine, Il Mondo Secreto. He founded this hermetic chain called the Magical Therapeutic Fraternity of Miriam. And he founded a school or an academy called the Italic Classical Philosophical School. And from there, he attracted, it became probably the preeminent esoteric center in Italy for the next 20, 25 years, and attracted at some point around 600 to 700 members. There were like 5 degrees that went from a novice to a master, Miriam. And the statutes, so the statutes are actually included in my book, The Hermetic Physician by Inner Traditions. And it talks about the focus of the scope of the Miriam is both to develop individual powers and collective powers. And he felt that practicing hermetic healing is the best way to to minimize the ego and to develop a more balanced and greater vision of the world than of just focused on the self.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
That's a great summary. Yeah. And for the audience, yeah, it was the outbreak was 1884. And obviously, as David says, really changed the course of his life. And yeah, he had certainly quite a varied amount of influences by your book, David. Some were Edward Bulwer Lytton. I think Rasputin is used as somebody who used Oaks, the medicine from Oaks well. You mentioned Count Cagliostro and so forth. I think what Egyptian Freemasonry was influential too in his life.
Well, Egyptian Freemasonry was one of the branches from this. So they're at the vertices of all these associations, whether Egyptian Freemasonry or Rosicrucianism or the Miriam, at the head of the. Of these various branches is the Egyptian order. So the Egyptian rite Freemasonry includes the rite of Mizraim, the rite of Memphis, and the rite of Memphis and Mizraim are just one current that radiates from this center called the Egyptian order, the Great Egyptian Order. which is a reserve circle of 12 adepts of Hermeticism.
So Egyptian Freemasonry in versus regular continental Freemasonry, the difference between what Egyptian is just much more hermetic, that would be it?
Yeah, it's been described in that manner. And reading of some of the rites and some of the practices of Egyptian Freemasonry, say example of what Cagliostro did, there was much more focus on hermetic practices. Rather than, say, the continental or Scottish Rite Freemasonry as well. So it had a different focus, and it based much more on hermetic practices rather than Kabbalistic and other type of practices that are associated with more of the conventional type of Freemasonry.
Yeah, it makes sense. And the question I had, why did he call it the Fraternity of Miriam? If there's something you could knock on Hermeticism, it doesn't have exactly a good focus on the divine feminine versus, let's say, Christian Gnosticism and a few others.
Sure. So the Fraternity of Miriam, or the Brotherhood of Miriam, it represents the two antipodes of the order. One is the brotherhood of humans, referring to the natural component, and the other is the Miriam, which is it's referring to a state of being, a state of purity. Mary, or Maria, being the in Christian theology, as being the redeemer of Eve, and for the practicing Miriamite is to be able to transcend their human self, to reach a level of purity called or referred to as the Miriam, where one is able to harness into these powers of therapeutic powers, and to be able to transfer them in a magnetic way for good, for healing, for relieving of pain, and so forth. So the Miriam is the Kabbalistic name for Maria. It's also referring to that magical space that initiates can tap into to be able to purify themselves, but also to transfer that purified energy to others for good.
Makes sense. And Vince, what do you think so far? Do you have a question for David?
Yeah, this is all new to me. So is there any modern vestige of these movements or whatever? Something you could point to either in Italy or the United States or any place else in the world?
Yeah, I'm not familiar in the States, but in Italy there are certain. So what happened after Kremert's death in 1930, the Miriam split into various camps. So not uncommon to what you see in a lot of initiatic groups, where you have self-proclaimed leaders, and it really turned into a very partisanal situation, where there were multiple sectors that were stating they were the true Miriam and so forth, and to a certain extent that's continued to this day. So in Italy there's a number of different groups that proclaim themselves to be the Fraternity of Miriam, with the I, and some with the Y. Others call themselves Kremertzian orders, and there are other different types of names and attributes that are used for more or less the same type of practices. And so it's the Miriam itself, the fraternity itself, after the demise of Kremert's, really split and fragmented to this day. I mean, you'll see a lot of literature in Italian on Kremert's and the Miriam, and sometimes, or a lot of times, it represents the various factions that are prevalent. Some are that are have a more higher profile than others.
That's interesting. Did Kremert stress the oneness and so forth that traditional Hermeticism does, or you think that would kind of propagate down to the people he left,
sure,
his movement to?
Yeah, sure, Vince. Yeah. So he does talk about it, and there is a credo, Hermetic credo, that refers to that. And I've translated one of his writings on the one as well, called Unus Solium. So the oneness of the soul of the sun, representing the soul and the representing God and the one and the all. So it is very much anchored and rooted within traditional Hermeticism, but also brought up to date for the exigences of contemporary society. It's not just a rehashing of the same old principles and doctrines. It's based on those foundations, but it's also brought to a context that is applicable and is understood in today's society and by today's individual.
Yeah, is this basically the same thing as the perennial philosophy? Is that tied into all this?
Well, the perennial philosophy, I mean, this is a tradition that has its roots in Hermeticism, and Hermeticism is definitely, at least from a Western perspective, part of the perennial philosophy. Ficino wrote about that as well. It's different than, say, something, if you're referring to the tradition of René Guénon, if that's what you're referring to, there really is an association with it. But it's a perennial philosophy in the sense that the roots are to a tradition, a Western tradition that has been recognized as such.
So why do you think all these factions came to be after Kermit's demise? What was their disagreement?
It follows human, human development, personality.
Which end of the egg?
Exactly.
Who's going to be the
alpha?
Which end
of the cosmic egg?
When everybody wants to rule the world, wasn't that a song?
Mm-hmm. Tears for fears.
So, when it's, again, very common. Same with the Golden Dawn. How many Golden Dawns are there?
Yeah, that's what's perennial. It's the splitting up. Religious science did the same thing. Like after Ernest Holmes died, his brother left, and then after he died, it split up into two pieces. And there's so many different stories. Christianity itself, of course.
Islam too, between the Sunnis and the Shia.
It's very common. I mean, I stay away from that. I consider myself an independent researcher and author and biographer, historian. So I don't try to get involved in the politics and stuff, even though it's when you're interviewing people associated with these various groups, they always want to bring you into, don't talk to this one. And, I've heard it so many times before. It's just, it's like a skit from a comedy show.
Were there any interesting questions there's a true need for disagreement, left over in Hermeticism that, they're legitimately taking one pole or the other? Or is it just trivial garbage?
I think, Vance, I think that the issue has to do with the legitimacy. So in terms of the passing on the tradition, who is a legitimate upholder of the tradition? I think that's what they come down to. But Kremertz even himself said on his deathbed, the one wish he had for the Miriamites is that they stay united and that they don't break into self-indulgent bickering among themselves. And literally upon the next day of his death, that's what actually happened. So there were self-proclamations from different chiefs and so forth. And it follows a very predictable morphology. So it's, but again, I, to me, that's the human aspect of it, which I'm less interested is on the perennial philosophical component.
Yeah.
About how one can go inside oneself to get outside of himself, to be able to tap into these energies, these pristine levels of being, and bring that to the surface for practical uses.
And it should be mentioned too, definitely an important topic, but how did Mussolini's rule affect the fraternity of Miriam, because obviously El Dulce was not a friend of Freemasons and other secret societies.
Yeah, so exactly. Exactly, Miguel. So when the Miriam itself relaunched its focus in the 20s after the First World War. And it was about that time that Mussolini's Black Shirts came into power, and they were very anti-Masonic and stating that the Masons were an internationalist group that were against the national interests of Italy. And so the fascists actually saw everything that wasn't, you know, orthodox for, to their perspective as Masonry. So they grouped in fraternity, which had nothing to do with Freemasonry, but because it was of an esoteric nature and had symbolisms that they weren't familiar with, they lumped it in with Masonry. And I think some of the fascist squads raided a temple in Bari in southern Italy, and so the academies itself, the hermetic chains, had to go underground and really dissolved in the mid-20s because of the fascist interdiction against secret societies.
Didn't Kremitz himself leave Italy? He moved to Monaco?
Yeah, Kremitz left Italy actually before that. Left Italy. He took up stay next door in Monaco, next door to Italy in Monaco. So he was actually living in Monaco, in the French part of Monaco, for about 12 years before fascism came into power. But he was still overseeing the fraternity and the academies from Monaco throughout Italy. So they had to the academies and the organized structure of the movement of the order had to go underground because of the repression from the fascist government of the time.
Yeah, it's something else. And yes, why don't we talk about what many in the audience are interested in, and that's the core, the tenets of Kremert's hermetic healing. And for the audience, the book does have a couple of rituals, the ritual of the Sagittarius and ritual of the Aries for you magicians out there. But David, why don't you tell the audience what was the core or thrust of his hermetic healing? What was it about?
Yeah, before I get into the specifics, the book does capture the biography of Kremert. It's the history of the Miriam itself. It goes into quite extensively on the doctrines of Hermeticism, the Hermetic practices, and includes the statutes, includes all of this material that it wasn't published or was meant just for members. And it does include two rituals of the spring and fall equinox. The tenets of the self of the practice is based on, as I mentioned earlier, of a magnetism, of a touching or entering into a state of a purity where energies are collected among the various members. So there are certain rituals that included fasting, ablutions, included various talismans, synchronization with celestial and lunar configurations, etc. And there are certainly rituals as well to be able to tap into those states, that level of purity where that energy can be collected and then stored and used for healing. So it's very much based on a convergence of human and celestial magnetism of energies, subtle energies, and to project them for healing purposes.
And at the same time, as you write, he wasn't just some magus. He believed in the sort of fusion of Western medicine and Egyptian magic or healing.
Well, the inspiration of the Miriam itself was based on the ancient mystery tradition of healing, where healings would take place in the various mystery schools, and that, you know, under various traditions like of Asclepius, for example, where patients were entered into dreams, and when they get into that subtle state, they are more prone for transformations than in a physical state. So a lot of those Egyptian and Greek and ancient Roman practices were modernized to make it based on the latest scientific evidence, but the principles were the same, was that there needed to be a fusion or a convergence between the practitioner and the afflicted party. And the states where those properties were enhanced are part of the therapeutic magical practices that are written about in the book.
At the same time, he did believe too, from reading The Hermetic Physician, in really the power of the mind or the power of the psyche or the unconscious. I mean, there's one section, David, where he used placebos like sugar pills, which is something doctors did in the early 20th century, which worked really well.
Yes, and it was based on the theorem that the individual heals himself, that we have the powers within each of us to heal ourselves, because we are one of the universe, and the powers that are collected in the universe are all reside within us. So some of his experiments to determine what the active agents are was to use placebos, and the sense of to being able to understand, to diagnose the ailment that the individual had, also allowed the practitioner, the magus, the therapeut, to be able to assist the individual in their own healing. So the practices are it's not just a one size fits all. It's very complex, and there are, based on the diagnosis, there are various types of therapeutic interventions that possibly could be used to assist the individual, depending on the level of the sickness that they have, whether it was a physical sickness, psychological, or had deeper roots in the karmic imprinting of the afflicted party.
Yeah, I think I agree that the power of the mind is underrated even today. I mean, even beyond the placebo, David, I don't know if you've ever heard of the nocebo effect, where you can actually convince somebody that they're sick and get them to throw up, have a fever, all that stuff. I mean,
sure,
we can do a lot with our brains.
Hypnotism works with those.
Exactly.
With those principles. But there was a practice that highly developed adepts of the mirror muse called valorization, where through their ability to project out their will, they're able to imprint the will on either an individual or on objects. An example was that Kremers, when he was a novice, he was walking along the beach with his master, Izar, and he asked his master that, if he could help him to have a cure to prevent him from nightmares occurring. And Izar picked up a shell at the side of the water's edge of the beach, and they said, "Here, you take this shell, and you won't suffer from nightmares." And Kramer says, "Does this occur through my self-suggestion?" And Izar said, "No. Even if you don't believe in the power of this shell, it will still clear your mind of nightmares because my will's imprinted in it."
That is very cool. And I guess the question is, what we should say is, the proof is in the pudding. What was his batting average? Did he heal a lot of people, or do we know?
Yeah. So one of the critiques that Daffy has about the Miriam is that they weren't very good record keepers. So they would just say in their archives that so-and-so came in with such and such of a diagnosis, and they were healed, or were they not healed, or they were sent to another another therapeutic intervention. However, he didn't say how long it was. There wasn't a lot of statistical information, and Kremers always had the notion that these hermetic healing practices would eventually transform into clinics, that, you know, like we have psychosomatic clinics and hypnotist clinics today, that there would be hermetic clinics in Italy and throughout Europe that would be refining these practices and taking it to the next level. But Daffy said the reason, you know, one of the reasons why the Miriam was never able to develop in that, in along that path, was it was impeded by the hierarchs, who, instead of emphasizing a transparent and non-personal practice, were boasting of their successes and of their, you know, their abilities to heal and so forth. And it became less about the practices and more about their own individual wherewithal. So the scientific basis that Kremertz put as the foundation of hermetic healing was sort of put aside from the personal personal developments or ego inflation of the various hierarchs of the academies and the chains in the various cities of Italy of that time.
Makes sense. And what about his views on Eros and love? Those were pretty cool too.
Yeah. So Kremertz had wrote extensively about Eros and love, saying that it was the, you know, the primary magical force in the universe. And that, you know, love that when it's stripped of its profane elements can lead to a sacred love that has the potential to transform and transmute, you know, the bestial into the divine, and vice versa. The, you know, a profane type of love can transform a sacred or a pure person into an impure person. So the power of love as a means for transformation was highly regarded and highly written of by Kremertz in his various books and writings.
Yeah, I like that section myself. And as we get to the end, a couple of maybe, I don't know, side questions, but have you read the Hermetic texts in the Nag Hammadi Library? I believe it's the Discourse of the Eight, the Nine, and the Prayer of Thanksgiving.
Yes, I have. I've actually read them in French, though, not in English.
Oh.
When I had the version I had was, I think, one of the first versions that was translated, I believe, from Syrian to a Western language was French. So I am familiar with that a couple of decades ago, though.
Yeah, I just think it's amazing. The Discourse of the Eight, the Nine gives so many like new prayers and actual rituals, kind of stuff that's been missing from Hermeticism for a long time. So I think it really adds to it. So, and the Prayer of Thanksgiving is obviously very beautiful about transformation and the gnosis of the Father and all that. And well, that sleep is obviously, it's a copy from the traditional text. So, but yeah, I was just curious. So Vance, as we get towards the end, do you have any questions or thoughts for David?
Yeah, I was wondering, you know, so many of the things you've been mentioning, you know, that come from Hermeticism are present in modern day mystery schools and quote unquote New Age movements. Are there any organizations or movements today that you feel are the closest to Kremertz's work?
I don't think so. I think it's without. I think the work that, as I mentioned, the points of reference that Kremertz and the Miriam has isn't really available in a forum that is that speaks to that level. I my reference point was to the Hermeticism of the Renaissance time, and man as this medium for the divine and the animal and you know the power that man has to create, to make, which is fundamental as in the Renaissance, and this is why the works, the creation that we had of art and architecture and society in the Renaissance hasn't been equaled. And I think the influence, the inspiration that Kremritz has is from that time and not from so much from the New Age, from some of this stuff that, you know, we see pumped out, but really is, you know, it's so generic and so diluted with some of this, you know, modern thinking that it's not really fair to associate it. This is something, a tradition that, as I mentioned, that goes back hundreds of years and even longer to a real font of tradition where forces are tapped into that that connect the individual, reorient individual in a certain trajectory that is not common in the West.
Okay, fair enough. Lastly, are you aware of anything Kremritz thought about the other esoteric movements of the day in the early 20th century?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say Kremritz was influenced from Martinism. I think he thought highly of Eliphas Lévi, where he mentioned that he was perhaps the only continental esoteric writer that had affinities with the tradition that he was representing. And of course, he had in-depth, firsthand knowledge and teachings from the French mesmerists and magnetic school that were popular in the late 1800s. So, and Rosicrucian as well, that, you know, a lot of that stuff is derivative. The sources come from areas of practice of experimental schools that later were incorporated into some of these more public groups that like the Golden Dawn and so forth, but where they were first originated. Even Paracelsus was a huge influence for Kremritz as well. Cagliostro, as I mentioned. So there's certainly a connection with contemporary esotericism, but in the sense that, you know, to take what can be used, and but not to compromise on the principles of the tradition that they're representing or that they're a part of.
Right. Thanks.
Yeah. Excellent. Oh, and lastly, I always like to ask this to guests, just for a point of reference. Are there any movies or TV shows that you go, this is really hermetic, this really embodies Hermes, or I like the way they incorporate hermeticism or alchemy? Any that ring a bell, David?
That's a really tough question. I think
I mean, we can always say Harry Potter and just wash our hands. That's
my basic definition of magic is applied intelligence.
Oh, I love it.
And intelligence of the seven forms, that to me is what hermeticism is applied intelligence. So any movie that is of intelligent, that has a deeper layer than what captures your physical senses, is to me hermetic. And anything that inspires you, that raises your spirits and provides you with some of those intuitive gold, is magical. And that's where we should be living, is life magical, not in the mundane sense. You know, it's so anything that's hermetic is to me, it has an intelligence that goes beyond the common senses. And anything that inspires you or sublimes, leads you to a level of sublimation out of the normal is magical. And the rest is all marketing, is branding, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, that's a wonderful answer, and I love it. So awesome. Well, we are at the end of the interview. Where can people find out more about you, website and so forth?
They could find out I'm on Facebook or Instagram. Send me a note. I know a few have already reached out to me that want to find more information or chat or whatever. Certainly, by all means, like to be open and transparent. And, you know, welcome inquiries. David Pantano on Facebook or on Instagram. It's a good place to start. You always can write to the publisher as well, Inner Traditions, but I'm pretty accessible fellow.
Wonderful. And your next book, what's it going to be?
Next book's going to be on Marco Daffy. It's going to be called The Magical Baron. And it's going to be a sequel to this book. It's going to be a lot more in terms of his practices and some of the avataric components of his initiatic voyages and journeys. So it's going to be really exciting, and hopefully it'll be out next year.
Wonderful. Well, in the meantime, audience, I highly recommend you read The Hermetic Physician. A lot more in the book that is just simply fascinating and really gives us a sense of perspective and honors those who really innovated and carried these mysteries, which are needed more than ever today. But first of all, Vance, thanks for keeping us company.
Oh, it was very interesting to find out more about Kremertz, and enjoyed that. And from this point on, if anybody says I'm a little daffy, I won't be so insulted.
Your avatar, yes. Awesome. Well, David, really appreciate you coming on Aeon Byte, and certainly appreciate you writing this book, and good luck with everything.
Thanks for having me, Miguel. And thanks, Vance. It was the hour went by really quickly, and I appreciate you having me on.
Pleasure all ours. Yeah. Thank you.
Take care, guys.
And there you have it, you shining crazy diamonds. David providing red pill suppositories galore and the history of amazing figures we should all know about. As mentioned in the intro, we could only do an hour because of some Archon monkey shines. So for all subs, I will include a past interview with Tobias Churton, where he discussed Hermetic philosophy, the connection of Hermes and Enoch, and a lot on Hermeticism and modernity. Pure alchemical gold. You'll love this bonus. So please support this Red Pill Cafeteria if you find value in the content. I can't do it without you. And the Gnostic and Hermetic wisdom is more important than ever. We either access, quote, the religion of the mind, or Yaldibaldi and his Epstein angels turn humanity into a lifeless machine once and for all. Keep in mind that in Patreon, there are tiers that work for your needs, your financial needs, so you can support as little or as much as you want. And the Red Circle sub is only $4.99 a lunar cycle for all complete shows. If you want to support with crypto, just let me know. I'll send you the info. And don't forget my Amazon wishlist, merch store, and voiceover services. And as always, if you just need this heresy, let me know, and I'll give you any full show or even a temporal sub on the casa. No one here is getting rich except for our consciousness. For all subs, led us to Tobias Churton's incredible insights on the Hermetics. For everyone else, thanks for being here, and I hope you've had your mind expanded and reality disbanded. Write your own gospel, live your own myth. Take it away, Tobias.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.